Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
Over the course of my lifetime, I've seen Thanksgiving meals and the way they're done, and meals in general, change a lot. And, you know, my mom, so people's grandmas and great grandmas, they really had spent a lot of time every day cooking in the kitchens and had a lot of practice skills. And through the course of my adult lifetime, we eat less and less at home and we do less complicated meals. So to try to throw together a Thanksgiving meal can be very stressful. And the less practice you have throughout the year doing big meals, you know, the more important it might be to get a few reminders about what to do to keep everybody healthy, even days after eating.
Hey there, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. That was Lars Johnson, very well known as the food safety guy. I thought it would be a great opportunity with Thanksgiving coming up and all of the holidays to follow, where there's going to be a lot of meals, a lot of meal prepping, large meal prepping, leftovers and leftover sharing. Like Lars says, many of us don't do this anymore. Don't do this daily or as frequently as maybe we used to, or our families, our parents and grandparents used to. I mean, my gosh, my mom cooked full meals pretty much every day for a pretty large family. So perhaps this is something you've done before, or you do, you know, a few times a year, or maybe this is the first time you're hosting Thanksgiving. Either way, in comes Lars, the safety superhero of the day, to remind us of all the things we need to do and can do to make our meal less frustrating, safe, and keep us all healthy and enjoying the day. I met Lars probably about 4 years ago now through the work that I do with food allergy safety training for restaurants and food allergy education. Over the years, we've worked on a few things together in a couple different capacities, and it's been fun going to events with him where all of the people from Minnesota collectively get together from food service and the food service industry. And it's fun how many people know him and how excited they are to see him and how he knows them. And he's an amazing connector of people and resources and ideas. And I had some really great opportunities through his encouragement and connections to do some food allergy training and education with a few places in Minnesota where they wanted to step up their food allergy awareness and education. Very appreciative of that. All right, let's head on in. Welcome, Lars. Thank you for hanging out with me this morning and talking about food and food safety.
Hi.
You are the food safety guy by website title and by business name and by what you do. All of the evidence I have seen, you are definitely the food safety guy. So Thanksgiving is coming up, and I thought it would be a fun time to remind us all about some of that food safety in our own homes while we're cooking our food and while we're having people over and there's leftovers and there's food hanging out and poultry in the house. So I thought it would be great to just kind of talk about some of those basics and remind us all of how that works and what we should be mindful of as we're prepping our food and having our meals so we can all be safe and healthy and enjoy our Friday off.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And over the course of my lifetime, I've seen Thanksgiving meals and the way they're done and meals in general change a lot. And, you know, my mom, so people's grandmas and great grandmas, they really had spent a lot of time every day cooking in the kitchens and had a lot of practice skills. And through the course of my adult lifetime, we eat less and less at home and we do less complicated meals. So to try to throw together a Thanksgiving meal can be very stressful. And the less practice you have throughout the year doing big meals, you know, the more important it might be to get a few reminders about what to do to keep everybody healthy, even days after eating.
That's a really good point. Yes, you're right. We don't do this as often as you have to be much more mindful and thinking about, okay, what am I doing rather than it just be second nature. So the food safety guy, talk about a little bit your history and a little bit about what the food safety guy does, and then let's dive into turkey.
So I had about a decade's worth of restaurant experience in different types of restaurant settings and different types of food and different positions that I held in restaurant companies and progressed through management ranks. And in the early 1990s, I got the chance to start teaching the professional food safety class. It was called ServSafe for the managers in the company that I worked for. And as I did that, I started incorporating what I was teaching into my own unit. And it was really fun. It was a challenge to take what was in a book and make it work and to get people trained to understand it and to implement it. Even though we had procedures in the manuals in our book, it's still a different thing to actually make it happen. It was a lot of fun, and the company grew, and the more we taught and trained our managers, those principles, it changed the way the company looked at food safety in the business, and that was very fun. As our company grew, I actually had a vision for creating a position called food safety manager, and we hit a size where they decided that was a good idea. So I left restaurant management and I became the food safety manager. And that meant that I was teaching classes. I was helping to make sure that we were compliant with all the health inspections and working with customers and training and visiting all the stores, making sure that we were following the guidelines and meeting the company standards. I did that for about 10 years. The company grew to 185 restaurants in four different states. And that was in 2007, that job ended. Started my own consulting business, basically doing the same thing, but most of my clients now were not 100 plus restaurant units. They were people that had one or two restaurants or food service of some type, school districts, et cetera, who still needed the training and needed the support and the knowledge. They just didn't have a staff position for it. So for 10 years, 11 now almost, Food Safety Guy has been up and running, and we do classes all over the state of Minnesota. We help people to comply with their health departments, put plans in place, and act as consultants to help them keep out in front of their business and keep all their customers safe. So that is that's the Food Safety Guy business. And currently I have other work that I'm doing out of state where I'm engaged as a food safety manager for a large company. So for the last 25 years, it's been all about a professional in the food safety world.
And I love, I know in our conversations and you sharing about the work you do as consulting, I always thought it was great that you, you know, when there's inspections for restaurants, people coming in to do those inspections, that you would go ahead and help them just make sure they understood what needed to be done and kind of prep them for it. So you weren't necessarily the scary guy. You were the guy that came in and said, how do we do this and make this work well?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, it's kind of the same way, whether you're in a home kitchen or whether you're in a church doing a meal for people, it doesn't matter. Nobody wants to do it incorrectly. Nobody wants to worry that people are looking over their shoulders. So just a few basic things that we can help people. People have a lot of, you know, it's referred to as common sense. Well, it's not really common sense. It's more common knowledge. And we want the knowledge to be good, so that people can make good decisions, because you're not going to have somebody probably on the phone talking in your ear when you're making your dinner at home. So getting out in front of it, talking about it ahead of time, helps people prepare and know what to do if certain situations come up.
So let's dive into Thanksgiving and prepping that big meal that that we might be doing for a bunch of folks. And I'm thinking, you know, starting with the turkey, we're getting the turkey, we're thawing out the turkey or making the turkey thaw. I don't thaw. If you de-thaw something, are you actually cooking it? I'm not sure. So what do we need to be thinking about even just in that beginning process? We're getting the turkey or we're trying to thaw it out. What are the things even just in that process that we should be thinking about?
Okay. So from buying your turkey, getting it home, and getting it ready to cook. Some things to think about are whether you're going to buy it fresh or frozen. If you are going to get a frozen turkey, and almost everybody does, then you need to have time and space to thaw it out before you start cooking it. It's really hard sticking your fingers into a cold turkey that's still got ice clinging to it on Thursday morning or Wednesday night. So you probably need about 3 to 4 days in your refrigerator to thaw a frozen turkey. So you want to have it in the refrigerator probably by Sunday so that it's got time to thaw to a point where you can manipulate it, take it apart and get it ready for cooking. When you bring that turkey in and put it into the refrigerator, you really want to think about where you're storing that turkey, because the turkey, like any poultry bird, there are most likely going to be some bacteria on it. When it's in a refrigerator that's cold enough, and that would usually be below 41 degrees, then there's not much chance that you're going to get extra growing bacteria. So you'll get, you know, putting it in the refrigerator or freezing it doesn't kill salmonella. So it's there. You just have to make sure it doesn't get onto other things. So make sure that it's on a platter or a tray that would catch drips. And you don't want what we call ready-to-eat foods next to the turkey while it's in there, because if it touches up against the wrapper or the packaging of the turkey, then it could get salmonella onto those things. So just store it in a way that it can't drip or touch other things. And same principle, if you get a fresh turkey that's not frozen, you want to be sure that you store it so that it doesn't drip or touch other things that you're not going to be cooking.
So I'm thinking, you know, you talked about having the appropriate amount of time to thaw it out. What if that isn't happening for somebody and they're realizing that and they're like, okay, how can I do this safely but quickly? Is there a method for that?
Well, you know, in the restaurant world, we talk about four basic ways that you can thaw things properly. And the point of thawing them properly is you don't want to give bacteria a chance to grow. So if you took a turkey and you set it out on your kitchen counter, would it thaw? Sure, it'll thaw. But by the time the inside is thawing out, the outside has been at room temperature long enough to really accelerate bacteria growth. So if it's frozen, you really do want to try to have enough time. Okay, so next question, what if you don't have enough time or you had to get another turkey? Another way you could do it is thaw it in the microwave. Most generally, turkeys are not going to fit in the microwave, so that's not a great option. There is a way that you could do it. It's called immersion. So if you had an extra sink and you want to, it really does need an extra sink just for the turkey, you could put it in a pan and run some water over it slowly and let it fill and let it run for, it's going to be a little while, an hour or two probably, to get it nice and thawed. Then if you're going to go ahead and cook it immediately after that, you could do it that way if you wanted. You want to use cool water as opposed to hot water to thaw it out. And watch out for splashing, because when water is running and it's hitting the bird, and if it splatters onto the counters, there could be, you know, salmonella on the surface of the turkey that gets spread around in your kitchen then. And another way you can do it, of course, is thawing by cooking. Usually when that happens, it's going to adjust. You need to adjust the oven temperature, because by the time the inside is thawing, the outside could be burnt. So, you know, really the best thing is to give yourself enough space on the calendar to get it thawed in the refrigerator. But there are some other ways you can do it and people will still be okay.
And when you talk about the cool water, you're wanting that to be cool for the sake of it's again keeping that bird at the temperature that's safe versus having the outside layer being too warm and growing bacteria.
Right. Depending on the part of your country you're in. You know, in November, tap water in north, like Minnesota, it's gonna be decently cold. It's gonna be 50 degrees or so. In other parts of the country, it could be 60 or more degrees. So probably just if you're running, you know, coolish tap water, you're going to be fine.
And let's just quickly address salmonella as far as briefly, you know, what is that and what are the dangers of it?
And salmonella is a bacteria that causes foodborne illness. So if people eat salmonella and it has a chance to grow inside them, then it will affect their body. They'll become infected with it and the body goes through some pretty severe symptoms. Now, it takes a fairly significant load of bacteria, of this bacteria, to make people sick. So if somebody ate a salmonella, they're probably going to be fine. But when you eat hundreds and hundreds of them, that's when you become at greater risk. Salmonella is pretty prolific on all poultry birds. And it has to do with what they eat. When turkeys and other birds like that eat, they're eating off the ground. They swallow gravel. And in the gravel, well, that's the same place they walk around, and that's where they're going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So salmonella leaves their intestines, it's on the ground, it goes into their throats, and then, so they have swallowed some salmonella. It's inside their intestines, and when the bird is butchered and the intestines are pulled out, there's splattering that happens. So it gets onto the bird and into the cavity of the bird, so it's going to be there. when people ingest it, usually the onset time for salmonella is anywhere from 18 hours to 3 days is generally how long after eating it'll be before somebody gets sick. We won't get into all the details, but there's great intestinal distress and there can be some fever that goes along with it. And often people that are fairly healthy to begin with, if they get salmonella, you know, they'll make it through. If someone gets severely ill, they should certainly go to the doctor and they might be tested for it. Especially this time of year, if the symptoms look like it could be salmonella, that doctor will want to do the testing. And there are antibiotics if that's what needs to happen. One thing about Thanksgiving dinners is we've got people of all ages who will be eating dinner. And there's some folks that are more likely to get foodborne illness sick if they ingest salmonella. For example, the young ones up to preteen, they're more susceptible. Anyone over, 50 really is starting to become more susceptible to illnesses. And anyone who's already sick or compromised certainly is going to be more susceptible. So when you have a mixed population like that around your dining table, you really want to be careful not to expose people to it.
Let's talk next about the turkey and how do we know when it's done and how much should we be worried about that?
Well, I guess we can talk about turkey as being done and turkey as being safe. And, through our cooking experiences, people have different feelings about what a turkey looks like when it's done. In order for the turkey to be safe, the recommendation is that all parts of it cook to 165 degrees. And that's because in the laboratory, when they do their science to figure out when salmonella dies, and because of the shape of the bird and the cuts of the bird, they know that if you get it to 165 and it sustains that temperature for at least 15 seconds, then a significant number of the salmonella bacteria on the bird will die. Can you cook it to less than 165? Sure. You just probably didn't kill everything that you wanted to kill. The nice thing about cooking, turkeys and other pieces of meat is that most generally, when it looks done, you've also killed a lot of the bacteria. But really, the only way to know is to use a good thermometer. There are a lot of good thermometers out there now. And if you have a restaurant supply store in your area, I would go there and I would just get a digital thermometer. It's probably going to cost about $20, but they last for a long time. The batteries are easy to change out and easy to find. Be able to get a good quick read, and you can use it for anything, not just for turkeys. And when you take your temperature, you want to check, really you want to find the part of the that's going to be the last one to reach temperature. So that's going to be the thick part. So, go into the middle of the breast, go into the thighs, go to the spots that seem thick and seem protected that are least likely to get cooked the most thoroughly. When those pieces are done, then probably everything else is going to be fine too. Be careful not to touch the bone and be careful not to touch the sides of the pants when you're taking temperatures because that will change the reading.
And what about the buttons in the turkeys, the little things that pop out when they're done? Are those pretty dependable?
Well, they probably pop out when they're supposed to pop out. I don't use them because, we have a thermometer and that's going to give me a better reading. The thing about those buttons is, they're temperature sensitive, so they're supposed to pop out at the right spot or at right time. But they're only in one part of the turkey. It's not feeling the whole turkey. And you really want to get a sampling of all the parts. If that's all you're relying on, it's a guess. And if you're really focused on wanting to make sure that it's safe, you really want to get a thermometer instead of relying on the button.
And I'm thinking of, and I don't even know if people do this anymore, putting stuffing inside the bird. Is that a long past tradition?
I'm sure people still stuff the bird. But really, the best thing to do is to take that stuffing, and maybe call it dressing instead, and get it all mixed up, cook it separately from the bird. If you want to put it in the bird later, you can do that. But really, the best way to evenly cook that, because you're taking raw ingredients, you're packing them into a bird. The bird is thick and has to cook properly. The dressing, especially if you add raw meats or you add egg to it, things like that, then those have to reach proper temperature. And the more packed in and denser the item you're trying to cook, the longer it takes to reach the right temperature on the inside. So it really is a best practice to cook the dressing on the side and then have the turkey separate for temperature reasons. But also think about menu selection. Not everybody that has turkey wants to have dressing. You know, you give people more choice, I think, on when it's time for them to fill their plate if you keep them separate too.
The next thought I have is how long food should sit out. You know, we have put all the food on the table or wherever we're putting it, and then we have a delightful leisurely dinner with everyone. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like? Where should we be concerned in how long food is sitting out, or, you know, something that we might want to make sure we get back in the fridge more quickly as we're hanging out, and what things are fine to just be out, we don't think about while we're enjoying our conversation?
Sure. So it depends a little bit on what kind of food is it and how warm or cold was it before it sat out. For example, let's take cold items first. Let's say that you have a vegetable tray. Honestly, we're not terribly concerned about celery sticks and carrot sticks. We can set them out and, you know, they can be out for hours and hours and it's not going to be a problem. Once you put cream cheese into your celery, cream cheese is what we call a TCS food. We won't worry about defining that really, other than to say it's more likely to grow bacteria on it that could make people sick. So if you have dairy, if you have proteins, those are the type of foods that you need to make sure you keep at, you know, at a cool temperature before they sit out, and that they cook thoroughly before they sit out. Once they're placed out for service, you have, let's just say, 4 hours before you want to get them put away. And most, I'm going to say a lot of people probably don't wait 4 hours before they put it away, but it could easily be an hour or two before someone wants to get up and start doing the work after having a great meal. If you're watching a ball game and the ball game doesn't go into overtime, then, you know, you're probably okay waiting till the end of the ball game and then getting up to take care of the food. But 4 hours really should be your cutoff time. And it's the foods that have the hazardous items. So pies, apple pie, we're not worried about. But if you have a pumpkin pie, maybe that had condensed milk or something with a whipped topping or, you know, meringue on it, that you want to put back in the fridge, you know, at a reasonable period of time.
Obviously, if somebody has something where they have a tool that's controlling the temperature or keeping it warm, that's something that we don't have to worry about. It can be out there and it's controlled temperature and it's going to be fine.
Sure. Like if someone has a crock pot, they can, you know, that'll hold at temperature most likely. Sometimes we put things on a little bed of ice. I just remember that when something's on ice, the only part that gets cold is what's actually touching the ice. Anything up above it, that's touching the air is going to be at room temperature. Mm-hmm.
How about leftovers? Then it's post mealtime, putting it in the fridge, maybe taking it on a drive home. But how long do these things sit in the fridge safely, and what should be really, you know, focus on eating first?
That's a very good question as well. When you're done and you're ready to put things away, you do want to get things put away as, you know, as quickly as you can. Put them into the refrigerator. Some things to watch out for. The goal is to get things you're refrigerating back down to 41 degrees, because after it sat out for two and a half hours, bacteria has started to slowly grow. When you put it in the refrigerator, that doesn't kill it. It just slows it down some more. But if it's in the refrigerator for long enough, it will continue to grow. Most generally, really nothing in your food you want to keep for more than 7 days. Okay, ketchup, salsa, those can stay for, you know, whatever the manufacturer says. But anything that you've cooked, 7 days should be your limit. Put it into containers that protect it. And you want to try to spread things out too. For example, if you can take your turkey and cut off pieces of meat, like thick breasts, you know, if you can slice it down a little bit or take the legs off the body, just spread it out and give it a chance to cool down. If you have gravy, maybe pour it into a shallow dish or, you know, a cake pan at an inch or less. And I know sometimes refrigerator space is a premium and it's hard to get things in there and spread out. Now, those of us in the northern climates, the balcony and the deck can be a wonderful tool for quick chilling of things. We know that. Yeah, you want to get it cooled down as quickly as you can to 41 degrees. Don't hold it more than 7 days. And that kind of means you have to have a plan for how you're going to use it up. Sometimes you hear all the jokes about leftover turkey. Oh, I'm eating it again. I kind of like it. It's nice to have those ongoing meals. But if you're not going to use it, if you look at your leftovers and look at what you got planned for the week, if you're not going to eat it in, you know, in probably 4 or 5 days, if it's not going to be on your menu, you might as well just throw it into some freezer bags now and save it for when you can use it. If you're going to send something home with somebody, if someone's driving more than 45 minutes to an hour to get home after having been there for 6 hours and the food sitting out, that's getting a little bit risky. You probably don't want to put food in a position where it's going to be out for 6 hours before somebody can put it in a refrigerator.
Bring a cooler with you to your Thanksgiving travels just in case they give you leftovers.
Yeah.
You never know. It's good to be prepared. Is there anything, you know, the 7 days, is there anything that we should be thinking about that really we should be prioritizing and make sure that we eat up more quickly?
Sure. Anything that you've cooked and you're cooling down, just make sure that you keep it within the 7 days. Anything dairy related, whipped cream, any types of meats, those are all things, gravies, potatoes, sweet potatoes, those types of things you want to be sure that you are, you know, using up within the 7 days for sure. Tofu, you know, people choose tofu or other things over meat. So make sure that those are the things that are 7 days or less.
Are there any nuggets of things that people just maybe common mistakes that people make that for some reason, you know, it just never occurs to them that, oh yeah, I need to be mindful about that thing that you see consistently over again, either in home prep or restaurant prep?
Sure. Well, I'll just go down the list of a few things that I think put stress on a kitchen at home for a big meal. If you're not used to doing a big meal, and especially if you're tight on counter space, here's some things to think about. One is you want to make sure that you clean your prep space ahead of time. So get your counters cleaned off, you know, work tables around the stove area, oven. Make sure that you've created space and that you give it a good cleaning. And some people will even, you know, have a spray bottle sanitizer that they've gotten at the store. That's fine to sanitize, but that's a good idea to clean it off to start with. Another thing is, as you're pulling out stuff, I know it's a big project and the cook doesn't always get a lot of help with putting the meal together. So try not to have too many things going at a time. The more you have sitting out, the longer it sits out and the harder it is to keep it at a good temperature. So if you can do a project, put it away. That's the ideal way to do it. Also, watch out for dripping and cross-contamination. We talked about putting the turkey into the refrigerator and watching out for dripping. Remember that sometimes you have produce drawers down in the bottom of the fridge and things could leak into the drawers. So be careful to protect things from that. And it's often produce that's in there. So those are things that might not be cooked. When you pull the turkey out, you're going to be setting it on a counter. So that's going to have to be cleaned after you finish with your turkey. It's going into the sink and there might be splattering. So when you're done doing things with your turkey, unwrapping it, putting it in the pan, do make sure you take time to clean off the area, the sink again, so that you don't have salmonella laying around. Also, don't be shy about using extra towels or cloths for cleaning. This might be a day where you throw a couple extra in the hamper, because after you clean up from the raw turkey, you really probably want to switch over any sponges or cloths that you're using or towels and just get them in the laundry and start fresh. That's a really good idea. You don't want that sitting around for hours and wiping it onto other things. So the cross-contamination around the turkey prep is really pretty important to watch out for. Hand washing is also very, very important. After you've handled the raw bird, make sure you wash your hands. And if you're doing raw eggs or you're cooking some sausage or other types of raw meats, make sure that you wash your hands after doing those so you don't cross-contaminate to something else. Here's something too that we don't always think of. Thanksgiving comes once a day and you can't reschedule the meal probably. What happens if somebody gets sick, a cook gets sick? It's a tough one to navigate and you don't want to let anybody down. But if the cook has symptoms that could be related to a foodborne illness, and sorry, but vomiting and diarrhea are big ones, that could quickly infect a whole family. So even though you don't want to have to use it, it might not be a bad idea to have a couple of frozen pizzas around just in case. And worst case scenario, you have them Friday night while you're watching a movie. But have a backup plan so that the cook wouldn't be forced into preparing a meal, even if they get sick. Keep raw and ready to eat separate. That's really important in the cooking world. And let's see. You asked some really good questions. So we talked about a lot of good things. Sometimes we get people that will volunteer to bring food items to the meal as well. And it sure takes a lot of pressure off the cook. But some things to remember are that if you've got something coming in that had been cooked at somebody's house and then it's coming over, unless they live across the street, it's going to lose temperature between their home and yours. And if they don't have a way to keep it hot enough while it travels, then maybe it's best just to receive it cold and to heat it up before you set it out and make sure that it gets back up to temperature. That would be a good thing to do. Yeah. So I think those are some good tips. Do you have anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, well, a couple things come to mind as you're talking. One of those is the produce in the drawer. So let's just, you know, in our mindset of keeping everything separate. But what if we do realize that either, oh my gosh, the turkey dripped on, maybe it's the kale that was below it, or maybe it's even the vegetables in a bag, one of those bags that you put them in at the store. What do we do in that case? Do we wash it off with something in particular, or is it just a better safe than sorry, let it go?
Well, the safest thing to do would be just to go ahead and get rid of it. If you're going to cook those things, and you know, plenty of people cook kale before they eat it. If you're going to cook your kale or cook what was in that bag, then you're probably going to be okay as long as you cook it hot enough. But if it's something that you're going to, you know, like carrots or celery, and you're going to chop them up, you'll be washing them, but it's still risky. You know, there are some really good fruit and vegetable washes out there that can help to get that stuff off the surface. And if you can source one of those, then that's a good idea. This isn't about focusing on pesticides or waxes. This is about removing bacteria. There are a couple out there that can do that. But really, if you saw that it got contaminated or it's sitting in a pool of turkey juice, the best thing is just to toss it and get some more. Or have a plan B.
We had Gene on with his fruit and veggie wash. And would that be when I know that Gene said it doesn't kill anything, it just helps the food release it. Do you have any thoughts beyond that?
I'm very familiar with that veggie wash. We use it consistently in our own household. And I know that when we get things from the farmer's market or from the store, we use it all the time. There may be some stuff on there, but if I know that it got dripped on by turkey, I'm probably going to just replace it.
Okay. And sponges. You mentioned sponges. And I know there are people that are very, very passionate about their sponge schedules, both in how long they can last and how they clean them. I don't love sponges because I just feel insecure about how often to change them. Or like you say, if I've cleaned up a mess like chicken or whatever, it's like, okay, what's the safest thing to do with that? So talk about sponges a little bit. You definitely talked about, you know, if you're using wiping things off with a cloth, toss it in the hamper and go to the next one. Share your thoughts on sponges.
Okay. All right. Sponges are absorbent and sponges are also not discriminatory. So anything that's wet enough to be absorbed, it will be absorbed. And often bacteria and other organisms, they live where there's moisture. That's one of the ways they move around. So if you are absorbing off a counter or a sink a liquid that has bacteria in it, it's going to hang out there. Sponges are also very difficult to clean. Can they be cleaned? Sure. But how clean do they get? I don't know. And unless you're really, really good at it, then it's going to be difficult. If you have to reuse a sponge, I guess I would rinse it out really good. I would soapy water it. So I'd soak it and then wring it out really good. I'd rinse it some more. And then I'd put it in a sanitizing solution, like maybe, you know, some bleach and a water. I'm not sure it's worth the trouble to try to clean and sanitize a sponge that costs 20 cents.
Mm-hmm. I think of those tools, you know, with the sponges on the end, with the kind of like the scratchy thing that you put soap in. And I've never been comfortable with them.
Well, one night about those is that there's always that soap supply. So that's going to limit the chance that bacteria get a chance to grow on it. But when you've got loose sponges that you're finished with it and you toss it underneath the sink, it's plenty of chance for things to grow. And you just never really completely get rid of those bacteria, probably.
Anything else that I'm not thinking to ask or that you want to share?
No, I just, you know, Thanksgiving is a great time for family to get together. I've got a lot of wonderful memories around Thanksgiving meals and, of course, some favorite dishes that we have at Thanksgiving. So we really enjoy it. And I hope everybody else does, too. Nobody wants to be sick during or after. So, you know, just taking a few minutes to think it through. Planning is a really important part of it. It's when surprises happen and you weren't ready for it. You have to make decisions at the spur of the moment, and that can be a little bit tricky. I know a lot of organizations do Thanksgiving meals, you know, or large meals between now and the end of the year. And sometimes, you know, I know in Minnesota, the state really encourages that you get some basic training around that. So because of that, we've put together a training class that is really, really helpful for churches. If they got a team of volunteers working to put a meal together. So it's designed specifically for volunteer groups and for churches. And you can find more information about that from us. But if you need more information, someone can certainly email, and we'll be happy to respond back with basic questions about, you know, safe food prep and to see what we can do to help you out.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time. This is really fantastic. And it's nice to have these reminders and just reminding ourselves why we're doing what we're doing and how to best do it to keep ourselves, like you say, having a fun holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just today, but, you know, weekend. Everybody's got to go back to work at least by Monday. So nobody wants to be sick, try to struggle through that. So happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for inviting me to be on your podcast. And look forward to seeing you again, Judy.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
You know, I do have to say, if you ever have a chance to take a food safety class from Lars, you should totally do it. He is really good at making the food classes fun, right? Like, you're spending all day talking about tons of different stuff, but it's a lot of information and there's a lot of numbers flying around and there's a lot of bacteria and various things like that flying around. And he has really great ways and tools to make it an enjoyable and fun day. So I highly recommend it. As he talked about, they do have classes for churches and volunteer groups. And if you are in the food safety or need to be in the food safety world, training, that kind of thing, they have 20 plus classes happening all over the state of Minnesota each month. They also do private classes. So if you have a restaurant or work at a place that serves food and you have a bunch of people who need to get through it, contact them to see if they might be able to come on site and do it right where you guys are. And like I said, this is in Minnesota. So just because of the way the world and the boundaries work, Minnesota is where the food safety guy classes happen. If you want to learn more about the Food Safety Guy, you can do that at foodsafetyguy.com is the website. You'll know it by the bright blue banner at the top. And if you have any questions, you can email them at info@foodsafetyguy.com. And in all my experience, they have a prompt, kind, and helpful staff to assist you. Side note, because I got curious, the words thaw, unthaw, dethaw, as you probably already know, mean the same thing. I had to go check it out. I was curious. I mostly hear thaw now, but I know when I was growing up, I heard unthaw and dethaw much more frequently than I do now. So I wasn't the only one that had that curiosity. There were multiple websites and discussions about it. Side note number two, I mentioned earlier that I do food allergy safety training and education, and I'm pretty confident I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it is something that I do with restaurants, be it a whole restaurant, be it one or two people. I also do not only the certified training, but I do education as well. So I can work with people like the church groups if they want to talk about how to work with folks who have food allergies. We can talk about what they actually need. And I do some just general food allergy education, which is so important for people when food allergies or celiac is new in their house, not to mention restaurants who really could benefit from just learning a little bit more, filling in the holes of the things they don't know. So if that's something that interests you at all, or something that you feel you need for any food that you're serving or catering or whatever you're doing, definitely feel free to connect up with me. You can easily get to me through the podcast website. You can also email me at judy@wellnessren.com. But I would absolutely love to chat and help you out if it's something you need. Thank you so very much for listening to the podcast. You can check out the rest of the episodes and topics at WellnessRen, R-E-N, WellnessRenPodcast.com. Sign up for our email list on the left side to just have an email pop in when we release a new episode, let you know what it's about. It links you right to it. Please share the podcast with anybody that you think might find it valuable or helpful. Absolutely appreciate your support in that way. I cannot tell you how much that is appreciated. Remember that another no-cost way to you to support the podcast is to head over to the wellnessrenpodcast.com page, click on support the podcast, click on any one of those Amazon links, and you will get into our Amazon affiliate page, which all it does is takes that shopping trip and a little piece of your purchase, again, no cost to you, goes to support the podcast. And if you really like what you hear and you want to help keep this going, please consider becoming a patron through Patreon, which is that big red button on the left on the website. There are multiple levels, small and large, that you can choose from. Oh, and if you're an iTunes user, please subscribe and consider putting a review up as well. That would be fantastic. Until next time, have a very happy Thanksgiving. May you be well and free of salmonellosis. And may you continue to find beautiful and tasty pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle.